Welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. I'm Joe Trainer, your host. Hopefully it's as beautiful where you're listening from as it is right here down on the main line of Philadelphia. It's just an absolutely gorgeous day. We're gonna have a great hour here. I got a special dear friend of mine. We've known each other for a long time, and his family is part of my family, and just really honored to have him on. But before we get welcome Darren to the program. As we always do, we're going to begin with an opening prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, as Darren and I gather here for the next hour in faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and when we leave here after our show tonight, that our deeds be your deeds. In Jesus' name we pray. Raise you with me.
I am. What's going on, my brother?
My man. Folks, okay, Darren Rizzi is the special teams coordinator for the New Orleans Saints, coming off another great year, which is par for the course down there. Darren and I have been friends for over 25 years. He's a pipe, as we call in our Saturday morning men's group. He is a pipe swinger, ladies and gentlemen. He's unapologetically Catholic. He's a phenomenal person. He's a great football coach. Obviously, he's on the cusp of being an NFL head coach. He's interviewed for a couple jobs here in the last 2 years. Was an incredibly successful college head coach. I had the pleasure of working with Darren at three different stops. Most of the stories are G-rated, but we'll only stick to them, Riz, for the next hour. just a phenomenal human being. Has that magnetic presence to him. Can light up a room. And you knew early on, you know, Darren had just, after an All-American career at Rhode Island, University of Rhode Island, he just ended up getting one of the final cuts in the NFL and then get right into coaching. But you could tell, you know, when he was 23, 24 years old that this guy was going to be great, because he just has a way. Football, and I say it all the time, it's not the skill set's the skill set. This is a guy, you know, Darren, you know, Riz could be successful if he was a lawyer, if he was a sales rep, if he was a, you know, he has that relational component that all successful people have, and just a phenomenal human being. Folks, just to give you a little bit about his background, Darren spent two different stints as a very successful head college football coach, University in New Haven, where he, Darren and I spent 2 years together. And then when he became the head coach, he brought his team down from New Haven, Connecticut, and we were living high off the hog at Villanova, thinking we were mighty, pretty good. We were 4-5-0, and Darren came in and blew the doors off us on a Thursday night. That was an epic game. And then went on to be the head coach at the University of Rhode Island, had assistant stints along the way at Colgate, Northeastern, Rutgers, ended up leaving the University of Rhode Island and became an assistant coach of the Dolphins for Tony Sperano, who we both worked for at the University of New Haven. And then from there, he moved to the New Orleans Saints a few years ago. The resume is crazy impressive. Comes from unbelievable people. His mom is a dear friend of mine, Phyllis. I hope you're listening. So if you are, I love you. And I owe Darren's wife, Tracy, a big shout-out because it's her birthday. So Darren's going to roll right to a nice dinner from here, taking her out, but she gave us an hour here, and I appreciate that. Five beautiful children: Mackenzie, Alex, Christian, Casey, and Cameron, and just a devout Catholic and phenomenal human being. So, Darren, can't thank you enough for coming and joining us here tonight. How's everything going, brother?
Joe, I'm doing great. If I had told someone 28 years ago you were going to give me that introduction, they would have been shocked.
Hey, equally shocked that I'm hosting a Catholic radio show, right? I mean, let's be candid. But we knew eventually we were going to get right it, and God was going to work through us, and we were going to be able to bring, you know, some, you know, our journey now is to bring people closer to God. But talk about an amazing upbringing. You know, you go talk about your family, BC, URI, and then just get us off, you know, those first, you know, 22-23 years. Just give the readers, give the listeners a feel of what your background is.
Yeah, no problem, Joe. You know, I grew up in a small town in New Jersey, northern New Jersey, in Bergen County, Hillsdale, New Jersey. You know, I've got you gave my mom a little shout out. I'm going to have to start off by doing the same. You know, my mom was raised a devout Catholic, raised my brother and I the same way. You know, certainly wasn't easy on her. She got divorced when we were young, and probably her faith grew stronger at that point than at any point in her life. And she made sure my brother and I were weekly attendees at Mass. We were altar boys. You know, we didn't attend Catholic grammar school because, quite frankly, my mom couldn't afford it. But my mom found a way, along with my stepfather, to make sure that I attended a Catholic high school. I ended up going to Bergen Catholic. And of all the great decisions my mom made in her life, that was probably a number one for me, being selfish. It was probably me attending Bergen Catholic just opened up so many doors for me, not only athletically, but just so many different people, great people that I've met, stayed in touch with along the way. I was a three-sport athlete in high school. I played football, basketball, and baseball. Ended up having a pretty good high school career. I was an all-state parochial player in New Jersey, and ended up I was one of those guys coming out of high school that was kind of like a tweener, an overachiever. You know me well, Joe. It's kind of sums up my life, the overachievement thing. But you know, I came out of high school and I was recruited by a bunch of schools, Villanova being one of them, Delaware, Hofstra, you know, Rhode Island, UMass, the old Yankee Conference teams.
Sure.
And ended up feeling that the University of Rhode Island was the best fit for me. Little did I know at the time, a man you know very well, Joe, guy by the name of Bob Griffin, was the head coach. Excellent. Another devout Catholic. And I really didn't know much about that going to college, but it was almost one of those divine interventions that, you know, I ended up at URI. I was a walk-on. And then fortunately for me, I ended up having a really good career. Like I said before, kind of worked my butt off on and off the field, and ended up earning a scholarship, becoming a captain there. And as you mentioned, I was fortunate to have and God bless me with the ability to having a great career there. And went on, and
well,
and
it's a bit of an understatement. You had 160 catches, 2,500 yards, 15 yard average, 15 touchdowns, and it was, ladies and gentlemen, he was a consensus All-American in 1992, and ended up signing as a free agent for our beloved Philadelphia Eagles after that. But I didn't mean to interrupt again, so finish what you were saying.
No, you're good, Joe. You know, the next thing I got to do is I got to send a shout out to the Philadelphia Eagles for cutting me, because it catapulted my coaching career.
No doubt. No doubt.
And you know, again, I was an overachiever. I was probably one of those guys that found my way into an NFL camp just because of my work ethic and all those things. And you know, I wasn't with the Eagles very long. And the way, to the listeners, the way that you and I met is a really, really ironic story. You know, I had just gotten released by the Eagles, and a guy that we both know very well, a guy by the name of Mike Kelleher, saw that I had gotten released. You were working at Colgate University at the time.
Yep.
And a gentleman had left just a couple days before to go take another job. Kurt Beathard, I'm sure you remember Kurt.
Oh, yeah.
And he had left to leave, and the job opened, and gosh, the door opened for me, and I haven't stopped coaching since. So that's how Joe and I met and ended up living together. Me, you, and our good friend Gary Comstock all lived together.
No doubt.
As
I think he still owes us some rent money, too.
That kind of brings me to my coaching career. And so, you know, I was, again, very blessed along the way. I stayed healthy. The Lord blessed me in a lot of different ways. Both, you know, guy, again, I mentioned it before, kind of came from a blue-collar background. I kind of grew up loving football because my grandfather, my mom's dad, who's from West Orange, New Jersey, he went out and played at Notre Dame.
Yep.
And, you know, so I kind of grew up a diehard Notre Dame fan. And another devout Catholic, my grandfather and my grandmother, and really that's how I kind of fell in love with football. My, you know, used to go to the old Meadowlands Giant Stadium, and
sure,
for about 4 or 5 years in a row, my grandfather would get us tickets to go to the, sit in the nosebleed to go watch, you know, Notre Dame play Army or Navy. And that's how I kind of grew to love the pageantry and all, everything that comes with, you know, Saturday afternoon of college football, and
awesome,
kind of fell in love with it and kind of took the ball and ran from there. And as I said earlier, kind of ended up at Bergen Catholic and ended up at University of Rhode Island, just around a lot of great.
You found your wife there.
Kept me, well, you can't, my faith alive. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
You found your wife there. Beautiful Tracy. I'm putting up with you after all these years. I mean, that's a win right there.
You're not kidding. And happy birthday, Trace.
Absolutely.
I hope you're listening as well. And, yeah, so you know, found met Tracy freshman year. And
rest is history. Five beautiful kids.
Another Catholic family. Her dad and her mom both grew up devout Catholics.
Phenomenal
in New Jersey,
people.
And Tracy, yeah, great people. And Tracy's one of four. And I'm proud to say, and I'm not just saying this for the listeners and for the radio show, but this is the true story. Our second date was on a Sunday night, and we went to Mass first.
That's awesome. That's
together,
awesome.
Together, and you've been there before, Christ the King.
Absolutely.
Church up in good old, yep, at Kingston, Rhode Island. So Tracy and I went to, I think, a concert on Friday night, and then Mass on Saturday night together.
That's pretty
great
cool.
Great student Mass up there.
That's
yeah.
awesome. Riz, yeah. you go to Bergen Catholic. Obviously, Tracy's from DePaul Catholic. You know, your kids go to St. Thomas Aquinas down in Florida when you were coaching with the Dolphins. So what is it about Catholic education that was, you know, obviously it was a huge part of your, you know, mentoring. Like what was it about your, you know, your commitment as parents to send your kids to a Catholic high school in Florida?
You know, Joe, I'll start way back when I first started going to Bergen Catholic. You know, I went to grammar school, I mentioned earlier, at the public, you know, public school. My older brother, Danny, did the same. He actually went to public high school for a couple of years. And, my mom didn't have a great experience with him. That's a whole other story. But, you know, I think my mom, you know, kind of had a vision for what, you know, she wanted me to be and found a way to get her and my stepfather found a way to get me to Bergen Catholic. And to be honest with you, it was an eye opener. You know, it was an all boys school. Here I am. I went K-8 to a, you know, to a school that was obviously co-ed and totally different. And right away, from the day one when I walked into Bergen Catholic, you can just tell and feel the difference in the structure of a Catholic school. And again, it was an eye opener to me.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, I didn't love it in the beginning. But looking back on my life, at this point, it, like I said before, probably the best decision my mom ever made to get me into a structured environment, to get me surrounded by, you know, and Bergen Catholic is run by the Christian Brothers, and
yep.
I just had some really, really strong influences there from a couple of the Christian Brothers. And, you know, obviously I go on and do what I do at Bergen Catholic. I go and meet Tracy in college, and she comes from a Catholic school background as well, K-12. And really we share a lot of the same ideals. You know, obviously we had decided when we got married to raise our kids Catholic and God willing, we could do it and send them to Catholic school. And that's what we've done all the way through. Listen, not that there's anything wrong with the public school system or other private schools, but Catholic school system has just been really tremendous for my family, for her family, for our family, and just nothing but positives to say. And we've lived in a bunch of different states. We've
sure.
lived in Rhode Island. We've lived in New Jersey. We've lived all over the place, and lived in Florida, as you mentioned, and all the way through. And sure, certainly each Catholic school had their own. Some differences along the way, whether they were co-ed or not. But all of those experiences, I think if you ask my children who are now 14, 15, 18, 20, and it'll be 23 tomorrow, Mackenzie's birthday is tomorrow, you know, if you ask all of them, I think they're going to say the same thing. You know, at some point, they feel like that structure along the way, Mackenzie's a college graduate from Penn State University,
yeah,
Alex is a sophomore at Penn State Christian, is a senior, and he's on his way to the University of Texas next year. And And I think if you asked all of them the structure that the Catholic school system has brought to their lives, not only spiritually, but also academically as well, has been a big part of their success.
That's awesome. Darren, you talked about your mother's influence and you know, obviously being educated by the Christian Brothers. Who were some of the other spiritual influences in your life, you know, in those formative years, or even really, you know, all the way through now? Do you have who would you reference as some, and that person had a profound influence on my faith?
Yeah, Joe, you know, starting early on, obviously my mom's clearly number one.
No doubt. She's my number one, too,
bro. Yeah, yeah, and you know that. My mom, and my mom's a little bit of a strong personality, as you know as well. But you know, my mom was, my mom kind of guided me down that road. And then when we kind of became an altar boy, and I started playing some CYO sports, you know, I played at a young age and had, you know, a couple of the priests at St. John's in Hillsdale became very influential to me, and they really were very influential in me going to Bergen Catholic. Mm. And then when I got to Bergen Catholic, I had really never experienced the Christian Brotherhood before. And ironically enough, even though I'm a football coach, two of the brothers at Bergen Catholic that were really, really instrumental in my life were non-football coaches. One was a guy by the name of Brother Stanicky, who ran kind of the school store. And he also was a history teacher, an English teacher, very, very, you know, I'd never experienced that my freshman, sophomore year, really never experienced a man like this. And just so devout to his faith, so devout to the young men at Bergen Catholic. And that was really interesting. And then the other guy, the other Christian brother Thomas Jensen, God rest his soul, who was my JV baseball and basketball coach.
Okay.
Brother Jensen grew up in New York City, grew up in the Bronx, and really just a disciplined, tough. And he's the one that showed me that you could be. I always kind of grew up with this perception that maybe if you were religious, I'm talking about as a young child.
Sure.
If you were religious, maybe you had a softness to you. And he showed me that it was the exact opposite.
That's awesome.
He showed me that being disciplined and being Catholic is really more masculine than maybe he showed me that not having faith is weakness, where I always maybe thought of it the opposite growing up as a teenager, didn't know any better.
Sure.
And he was the first guy, because he was a hard-nosed, tough, disciplined, just kind of a guy's guy,
yeah.
But at the same time, was a man of the cloth, and he also coached. He was also into sports. He actually coached at Power Memorial in New York City.
Wow.
When Lou Alcindor, and Kareem was there, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he would tell stories after stories of from his time there, and really, Joe, it was awesome.
That's cool. You talk about, you mentioned a little bit about CYO and obviously, you know, the platform in sport. Like, what do you think it is about the platform of sport, Riz, that gives? You know, you're mentioning Brother Jensen. What is it about these people that, or the platform of sport that gives us the ability to bring people to closer to God, do you think?
Joe, I don't think there's any greater platform for that in our society, in the world, than sports. I mean, I think COVID is a great example. I mean, you know, COVID, I think this last calendar year has really, you know, I think taught us a lot in society about a lot of different things. And to me, it's shown how powerful sports can be and the platform that we have. And I think, you know, from a young age, right from high school, I think, you know, watching all these young men come together in all the different sports that I was involved in, and watching everybody pray before the games. Like when I went to Bergen Catholic, Joe, that was very foreign to me.
Sure.
You know, to have a prayer before a game.
Sure.
I remember the first time it happened. It was a freshman football game, and I'm playing my first game, and all of a sudden everybody's on a knee and we're praying before the game. I had never done that before. And I was in ninth grade, and I was kind of looking around like, and it was such a strong, I guess, moment in my life, and I always remember that moment. I can remember that exact moment.
How about that? That's
and,
crazy.
Yeah, and I remember like leaving the locker room with kind of a renewed energy, kind of feeling like we were taking the field as one. And I think that's what, and I got to be honest with you, Joe, all the way through, I've been very fortunate. Like I mentioned, I had a Catholic college football coach. We did the same thing. We prayed. You and I both worked for Tony Sperano.
Yep.
Tony Sperano, who was
devout.
You know, same.
Yep.
Yeah, and the same in the NFL. And Mrs. Benson, our owner here for the New Orleans Saints, is a devout Catholic. And we do the same thing after every game here. People may not realize that after every game, we take a knee in our locker room, and this is player driven. It's driven by the players, not the coaches and the staff. And the players say the Lord's Prayer after every game.
That's awesome.
And there's really just something about bringing everybody together, bringing everybody closer, you know, and that bond. You know, I think to Jesus and God, and I think it's just a powerful moment. I think that allows the players to go out on an individual platform and bring more people closer to God as well.
That's awesome. You know, in the cancel culture today, Riz, you know, and you talked a little bit about it. I mean, I still think there's a little bit of that false pretense, right? Like where, you know, especially in the alpha male culture, and I don't bow to nobody. You know, I you know, showing humility, you know, to a God, to your maker, it's almost you know, counterintuitive for a lot of people, right? Because you want, you know, hey, I don't need any help. I'm going to handle my family, and I'm going to provide, and I don't need anybody to look out over me. And you know, in a day and age when it's not always easy to be faithful, right? Certainly publicly, and you're in the high profile profession of the NFL, like. Is it difficult for you to navigate through, you know, your faith? Obviously you alluded to, you know, the owner, you know, and her devoutness, which makes it easier. But your experience, like with the Dolphins, you know, where you spend, you know, a big part of your NFL career, is it hard to kind of navigate through that and live a faith or profess a faith filled life and in a time where some people refer to it as we're in the post-Christian era. Like this is like Christianity and God, you know, it's almost like there's the sophisticated intellects want to think that like we're beyond that. Is it hard to navigate through that for you, Riz?
Well, it is, Joe, because I think we live in the most judgmental time that this earth has maybe ever seen.
No doubt.
I mean, everybody's judged based on everything. And I think that most people, are afraid to take a stand or stand for something.
No doubt.
You know, and, you know, a guy that you and I both coached way back when at the University of New Haven forever ago, a guy by the name of Bo Tyson, who was really a devout Christian. I remember him saying to me one time, it was a player, and he said to me, well, coach, if you don't stand behind something, you know, if you don't stand for something, then if you don't get behind something in your life, then and stand for something, you don't stand for anything. If you don't get behind something in your life and put all of yourself into something, all yourself into God, then really, and he, as a young guy, as a young player, he kind of opened my eyes to some of that.
That's
and
awesome.
Really the way the conversation started is we wanted to bring up having a open forum for anybody that wanted to pray before the games. It didn't matter, Catholic, Christian,
sure.
You know, Baptist, didn't really matter what the religion was. He came to me and he said to me, he came to me with a sheet of paper, he put it on my desk, and he said, coach, if you don't stand for something, then you'll fall for anything.
Mm. Wow, that's
and
pretty awesome.
And here's this young kid, he's 18 or 19 years old, and he kind of opened my eyes at the time. And that's what we did, and I think I've been very fortunate along the way because I've had a lot of great mentors in the coaching profession so that when I became a head coach, it made it easier for me. There's a lot of people that may not agree with having some type of religious service before a game or a prayer after a game. And I understand that. And that's everybody's prerogative. I'm not taking that away from anybody, but to have that ability or to have the option and present that option to players, I was kind of very, very taken back by how strong that attendance is everywhere I've ever been.
That's awesome.
And I know you could say the same in the places you've been, places that you've been where you've had prayer or mass or some type of Christian message or Catholic message before a game, how well those things are attended, and they're not mandatory. Would you agree?
100%. I think, you know, I think that the humility that most athletes and coaches have had, hey, we've all gotten punched in the face, right? We've all gotten our butt kicked, and you know, we've been on the you know, the wrong side of that you know, butt kick. And I think with humility, you know, one of my favorite lines is that, you know, we're all broken. That's the only way the light gets in, right? Like, you need, you know, when you get punched in the face like that, you know, and I think too, like, I think, you know, particularly in the African-American community where, you know, it's such a faith-based people, like they're so in touch with their faith. And, you know, and obviously our Catholic faith, and people would be surprised. I just felt like, to your point a couple minutes ago, we're all so paranoid. You know, we live in such a sterile, you know, and I was at Mass this morning and they were talking about, you know, when the Pharisees brought the woman you know, who had committed adultery, and they were ready to stone her, and you know, and then Jesus is like, yo, he who has no sin be the first to cast the stone. And you know, we live in such a culture, you know, I know one of my kids challenged me like 2 weeks ago. There was a country singer that did something grossly inappropriate. He was pretty Morgan Wallen, I think it was, and whatever, he did something inappropriate. And then, so, you know, I told my kids, hey, I don't want us to listen. You know, I don't want you to listen to him anymore. And it was like, we live in a time where, like, you know, you can't fail. You can't make mistakes. I mean, God forbid, Riz, if there were cell phones, you know, 30 years, 40 years ago when we were in high school or, you know, or in college. And, you know, it's, you live in such a you said it earlier, paranoid, you know,
judgmental society.
Judgmental,
sure.
Society, man. It's like we can't, and I feel like, I feel bad for our kids, man. I feel bad for, you know, your brood and my brood. It's like, you know, especially when, like, there was, and I don't want to say we missed the boat, but, like, you know, on issues of race or you know, assault or any, all the hot button things that you know, you're dealing with as a parent, I'm dealing with as a parent. Like, we're not having honest conversation publicly because we're afraid of like what, you know, and I'm coaching my kids up like, hey man, be careful what you say here. And it's sad because I look at all my ignorance over the years, you know, and you know, you only, you know,
sure,
you know, you only get, you only broaden your lens or widen your lens when you have honest dialogue with people and you've come to view, man, that the way I thought about that was so immature, so childish, or so wrong. But like, we're not giving young people a chance to have those conversations today.
And you know what, Joe, that really goes back also with you and I, and our background may be a little different than most, but you just kind of described coaching in a nutshell. You have to be, as a coach, you have to be able to learn by mistakes.
Absolutely.
You have to be able to take others' thoughts and others' opinions and to be able to get all, and that's why football is probably still one of the greatest games I've ever invented, is because there's so many people involved.
Sure.
And you have so many different facets and opinions and everything else. But at the end of the day, when you come out of that locker room, everybody needs to be on the same page.
Absolutely.
And you know, as you were talking before, in my mind, the thought that comes to my mind is we live in a society, in my opinion, that is starting to refuse to forgive.
100%.
And forgiveness, as we all know, especially as Catholics, is a huge part of our faith. There's not one perfect person walking around.
No doubt.
And the Bible verse you mentioned from this morning is all about forgiveness, because at some point, all are to be forgiven. And that's I kind of chuckle sometimes, because all these so-called experts and everybody else have all these great opinions, but at the same time, and the last ones to forgive are the first ones that want forgiveness when it's their turn.
Absolutely.
To step to the forefront.
It's
really the you know, you and I coach at a couple of schools where we saw so many student athletes that were given a second chance do amazing things.
Absolutely. I think, and you said it, and, you said it earlier, too, like, the best.
It's, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Constructive criticism, right? If you don't give any of us the platform to be criticized constructively so we can do better and be better, you know, and And you know, you said it. I mean, better at what? Better at husbands, better sons, better fathers, better, you know, better employees. All of it. Like if you take that away, I mean, where are we as a society? Right? Crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is, Joe. And as you know, social media has changed a lot of things. What I mean by that, it's changed many aspects of society. But one of the things it's changed is that. I think, in my opinion, that people want to put out this false front and not put out things that others want to hear or they want others to see.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the truth.
That's not necessarily well said.
Because everybody's so scared of getting judged. And you know what? And I go back to that brother Jensen who I had in high school. He's the one that kind of taught me, like, for lack of a better word, being Catholic's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not a weakness to have faith. In fact, it's probably harder and probably more discipline and maybe make you more of a man to have faith in any religion. It doesn't have to be Catholic. It could be any religion. If you have a strong faith and you're disciplined, you stick with that faith, that's harder than not having any faith at all.
Absolutely. Riz, we're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back in about 90 seconds. Folks, we have Darren Rizzi, special teams coordinator of the New Orleans Saints, with us right here for the next half hour. We'll be back in 90 seconds, Riz.
Hello, Father DeLacy here, and I owe a great debt of gratitude to the In His Sign radio ministry. It was this radio ministry that I listened to when I was going from being a lukewarm Catholic to an engaged Catholic, and this ministry really majorly affected the Catholic that I am today. Kathleen McCarthy in particular has an uncanny ability to speak to the heart, and when she speaks to the heart, she speaks with God's love, with His grace, and with His mercy. I can honestly say that I am a better Catholic, a better man of God, and have experienced the healing and joy of the gospel because of the great ministry of Kathleen McCarthy. And so I encourage others to listen to her so that they can experience the beautiful work that God does through her beautiful words.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We are blessed to have had this Catholic radio apostolate for almost 40 years now. Thanks be to God for your partnership. Without you, this radio voice would be silenced. We have a monthly Mass offered for you, our loyal family of listeners. It's our way of saying thank you for underpinning our apostolate with your many prayers and financial support. This is your radio ministry, to be a voice for those who have no voice, to evangelize and to catechize for a time such as this. We know the Lord will bless you abundantly. He can never be outdone in generosity. If this ministry has touched your heart, help us to touch other hearts by supporting us with your prayers and financial support. Call us at 610-527-2906 or visit our website at InHisSign.com.
Folks, welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer, with special teams coordinator for the NFL New Orleans Saints, coming off a great year, 12-4 in the regular season, which is par for the course because they're one of the elite NFL teams year in and year out. Darren, I'm coming off of the break, my wife just texted me and she said she's getting very nostalgic. She said she misses the old days with Darren and Tracy, the trips to the Poconos, sharing hotel rooms, and all the good times we shared together. We had a lot of great times.
She just misses me singing some John Cicada in the car, I think.
In that black, what was it, a GTO? What did you have there? What was it, a Mustang?
I don't even know what the heck it was.
God, yeah. Too funny. But, you know, you talk about, the, you know, and you know,
the old Escort EXP or something like that, yep.
Talking about your mother, Phyllis, and what a pipe swinger she is, and I would follow that woman anywhere. And then your stepfather, Jimmy. I mean, I look back on that, and I was thinking this weekend, and I knew we were going to get together here. You never stop learning, right? Like, you think, you know, you talk about all those influences early on, and you know what? They taught me so much as a male in my early 20s. Like, you know, what fatherhood. You know, Jimmy, you know, what fatherhood, man. I mean, he was a grinder, man. And he was just one, he was a doer, you know, and I'll always appreciate that about him. Like, wanted no accolades. Like, all he did was, you know, heck, he built the weight room at Bergen Catholic. And then Phyllis's like influence. I mean, and you know, here I am in a stage of my life where I'm now parents of, you know, kind of like you, you know, we're parents of kids that were not far from our age, you know, at that point, and learning how to parent young adults, you know, and what Phyllis and Jimmy showed me and Mo, you know, I take with me to this day. So you're just trying to always telling your kids, right, that you never stop learning, and there's no such thing as a coincidence either. You know, God puts people in our lives.
No doubt.
You know?
No doubt. And listen, we all know there's a plan for every single one of us. And sometimes you don't, your eyes don't open to some of the things until you get older.
Amen.
And, you know, as you go through life and you appreciate more and more and more. And I got to be honest with you, you know, we talked about, you know, my mom keeping my brother and I kind of disciplined with our faith in Catholic Church. And listen, it was never perfect, but darn, she was going to make sure that we always kept God in our lives.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, when you finally figure out as you get older what work ethic is, I think our kids don't know what that is yet, or most of them.
No doubt.
But when your eyes get opened up to what work ethic is, you know, you mentioned my stepfather earlier, who you knew well, and you know, when I see the word work ethic, he's the first guy that pops into my mind. He kind of, you know, in maybe a little different way than others, he kind of taught me what work ethic is all about, getting up every day and putting in a hard day's work. And to be honest with you, I think it's made me, you know, he didn't teach me a lot about football, but he taught me what it was like to not be afraid to put to grind and to put work into anything. And I think it's one of the reasons that I've become, you know, he's one of the reasons why I am where I am, because of the work ethic and the hard and just the discipline and not being afraid to work hard at something.
Absolutely.
And showing me that if you really put time into something, whether it's your faith, your family, your job, whatever it is, you know, hard work does pay off, and for sure.
And he did it with such a humility, too, because he wasn't like one of those front and center, look at what I did, look at me. I mean, he was just a, you know, humble as the day is long. You know, and his I think his humility matched his work ethic, because he was, and that's why they were such a power couple together, because they fed off of one another, and you know, they kind of made sure that everyone, you know, all bases were covered with Team Rooney. Riz.
Oh, they fed off each other. Okay.
No doubt. You know, it has to be like, you look back on the last, you know, 14 months, right? I mean, we have the COVID hits, right? And then you don't know, you know, I look back at that, oh, it's going to be a 3-week hiccup, and then we're going to get back to, you know, happily ever after. And then you have the perfect storm with George Floyd and the racial tensions. And then here you are, like, trying to win football games and, you know, turn out all the noise, you know, around you and focus on, you know, the 55 to 60 players, and then the 25 coaches, and then the 35 to 45 staff. So you have 150 people in the organization that you have to kind of just bear down, keep together, keep healthy, you know, because of COVID. Talk about that experience in the last year and how you guys were, and obviously go out and win 12 football games in the hardest professional league in the world. Like, you guys did an amazing job with that. Talk about the last 12 months with the Saints and some of the things that you guys had to overcome.
Will do, Joe. You know, obviously you and I have known each other a long time. Any great thing that we've ever been involved with, whether it's been from youth CYO, basketball, all the way up to the NFL and everything in between. I think that both you and I can agree that any great team, great organization, whatever it might be, that we've ever been a part of has great leadership. And no different than the church, right?
Definitely.
Any great church that you've ever been to, any great parish that you've ever been to has great leadership. And that's really, to sum up the New Orleans Saints organization, the last couple of years here, for me, my biggest takeaway is we have phenomenal leadership. And not only in ownership, Mrs. Gail Benson is an outstanding owner. Our general manager, Mickey Loomis, our head coach, Sean Payton. And really the most impressive thing here, for those that don't know, is the leadership from our players. Our locker room, I can honestly say, I've coached college 16 years and NFL 12. I feel like I'm getting old now. But 28 years of coaching, and certainly all the years of playing football and other sports, I've never seen a locker room like this, meaning the cohesiveness, the ability to have the tough conversations without hurting feelings, the ability to be on the same page, the ability to make sure that we're all working for the same common goal, the ability for multiple people, not one or two, to get out in front of the room, to be able to address the room, and to be able to get everybody on the same page, black, white, doesn't matter, color, creed, religion, to really bring everybody together. And that's really been the most impressive thing.
That is impressive, because that's not easy.
Yeah, it's not, Joe. And you know this. The more distractions there are, the harder it is to lead.
Sure.
Again, that goes in a community, in a parish, in your family, in sports, anything. The more distractions, the harder. It's easy to lead a well-oiled machine.
Absolutely.
Right? You press the button. It's the machine that has the belts breaking and the cogs and everything else is rusty, and those are the tough jobs. And that's been the most impressive thing about being here with the New Orleans Saints, is just watching our leadership over the past year. And listen, we weren't perfect. We had our share of tough conversations and getting everybody on the same page. But I'll tell you what, it opened up a lot of eyes, including mine, and watching people come together to achieve a common goal. And that's what Sean Payton has done here. No matter what's gone on, whether, no matter what crisis or, turmoil or whatever, however you want to word it, he's done a phenomenal job, and so have the players, of putting things not under the carpet, by no means, putting them up to the forefront, discussing them, getting feelings out on the table, and making sure that everybody moves forward with a common goal. And I think that's one of the great things about sports.
Kudos.
Great to watch.
Absolutely. Kudos to the Saints and the whole organization, because the platform, to be honest, is so rare and so it's doesn't happen. We spent 15 minutes talking about that. Like, there's not a lot of companies, organizations, schools, NFL teams, and everything in between, where people have the platform to have honest dialogue and exchange. So that's pretty awesome that leadership. I'm sure it does come from, from a great owner and a great head coach. It's kind of amazing. 12 years, and you've only, usually when you talk to guys that are coaching the NFL for 12 years, they're on their fifth city. You know what I mean? Fourth or fifth city. But, for you to raise your family, you're slightly ahead of us in terms of the age, with Mackenzie and Liam. But, for you to have so few moves, and most of your moves were pre-kids, in the early stages. But that's pretty awesome that you haven't had you haven't done a ton of different school systems, and we both know the horror stories that come with all those moves and being away from your family, for 2 or 3 years because you have a son or a daughter that's an athlete or is this junior in high school and they don't want to relocate. But I just thought about that when you said 16 years in the college game and then 12 years in the NFL.
I was super blessed to be in one location for 10 years, really in the most probably quote unquote important times of my kids' lives,
sure.
Right in kind of the heart of their lives. And as you mentioned, they went to St. Thomas Aquinas High School and St. Gregory's grammar school and be able to be somewhere that long and get to know everybody and obviously the priests and all the different religious that run those schools were phenomenal. To get to, you know, Mackenzie, for example, became really good friends with one of the priests. You know, I can honestly say he wasn't only a priest, he was a friend.
That's awesome.
And he was a Dolphins fan. And he was he grew up Father Manny Alvarez from Miami, and the child of Cuban immigrants who became a Catholic priest, and to stay close to him. He still, he'll still text Mackenzie now and then about football. Not even, you know, sometimes not even about religious things or Catholic things that are going on. He'll just as a
That's
friend.
Awesome. That's
so
cool.
To be somewhere that long, those are the little things that people don't think about.
Absolutely. So you spent 12 years, you know, in the NFL, very, very high profile. Who, in terms of your experience, you know, with the different organizations, whose faith journey has kind of inspired you a little bit with both organizations, whether it's a coach or, you know, a player, you know, just their devotion to their faith. I'm not even asking like Catholic faith, but like just someone that's really just committed to that greater purpose and sees that relationship being a priority in their life. Is there anybody that would come to mind, players or coaches that you've worked with?
You know what, Joe? There's a couple. There's a couple. I've been really, really blessed to be around a couple. The one that comes immediately to mind currently on the New Orleans Saints is a guy by the name of DeMario Davis.
Okay.
If you don't know anything about DeMario, DeMario is a linebacker for us. He's been an All-Pro, a Pro Bowl player. Yeah. And you talk about a guy who has a strong faith and really goes out and practices what he preaches in the community. He's got, I really don't have enough time to go into all the initiatives that he has out there, but
sure.
He was our candidate for the NFL Man of the Year because of all the hard work he's done with the prisons, the community, the youth in the community. He puts his money where his mouth is. Unbelievable. I mean, obviously the name that everybody knows, Drew Brees. I didn't know Drew very well before I got here, but to watch what he's done with his faith and his family and the community, not only in New Orleans, but in a lot of other places. But you talk about a person that is absolutely just completely convicted to his faith, and to watch what he's done here in the city of New Orleans since he's gotten here for the last 15 years. And I kind of knew as an outsider, but once you get here and kind of see with your own eyes and watch how those two guys go through on a daily basis, they've been tremendous. And you know, there's a lot of guys with the Dolphins as well, but those two happen to just come pop into my mind for two of the guys that are here in the New Orleans community that just do a tremendous job with their faith, family, and certainly the community.
Gotcha. I've wondered this before, like I don't want to say this. So it's like your strength coaches. So you have different schools of thought, right? You have, you know, you might have a high intensity, bigger, faster, stronger, whatever, and you're trying to paint a broad brush to make sure everybody's comfortable in the weight room, right? Is it a similar philosophy with faith, Riz, with an NFL team? Like do you have a team? Do you have a team chaplain, or is it kind of like you want to make sure a lot of different lanes are covered, so to speak? You know what I'm asking?
I do. You know, most organizations, Joe, that I've been with, you know, and we mentioned it earlier, just about the voluntary services prior to the game. And you know, we have a Christian-based chapel, and I know you're kind of familiar with this, and then we have a Catholic-based mass. And I'd be honest with you, I would say the majority, and it's obviously voluntary, I would say the majority of the team goes to one of those services.
That's awesome.
You know, I'm proud to say, that, you know, I go to the Catholic Mass, you know, before every game.
That's awesome.
If we play Sunday, we'll have a Saturday night or a Sunday morning Mass. And then there's a lot of the guys that go to the chapel and you know, whether they're, you know, they'll do some Bible verses or have a kind of a theme of the day. And I'll give you a really quick story that I thought was pretty neat. You know,
definitely.
Here I am, I'm coaching my first game with the Saints. And here we are, we're on the road, and we're going to have – you know, in the pregame, and all of a sudden I see Drew Brees kind of walk through the locker room. I see Drew Brees stand up. He says, "Okay, everybody, we're ready." And I kind of see him walking, and it was Drew was going to lead a prayer. And usually he'd pick like a big room, a shower room, or a, you know, a big open space in a locker room. And again, a voluntary thing but it was kind of, Drew had been here so long, it was kind of a staple. And Drew said, "Hey, we're ready." And I see him start to walk, and literally like the Pied Piper, I see all these guys, and all of a sudden the locker room emptied out. I didn't know what was going on. I turned to one of the other coaches and said, "What's happening?" He said, "Oh, Drew leads a prayer before every game." And I looked around. I don't know if there was anybody left in the locker room. I think the entire team followed him into the shower room and took a knee and said a prayer. And Drew kind of led a big prayer. So I think it's more prevalent in sports than – I don't think it gets broadcasted or it gets this great attention on social media or certainly in the broadcast media. But I think that there's more faith in sports, not only the NFL, across the board.
Absolutely.
Then maybe the general or the average fan would really understand, because it's kind of kept low-key and private. Not that it should be, but it is. And it opened my eyes, and that was a pretty cool story I thought I would share.
That's cool. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, it's funny, as you say that, I'm thinking, right? Like, you're good athletic teams, organizations, right? So many people can learn about race relations and spirituality. And, you know, there you are. Hey, get, you know, you're not... You can't skirt the issue. You have this like perfect storm. We are totally fractured as a society, and you know, black and white. And like, you know what? You have all comers in the locker room, right? You have atheist, you have black, you have white. One of my favorite. I don't know if you've ever seen the Coach Carey video about the huddle. It's called The Huddle. You ever see that, Riz?
I have not.
He talks. It's just basically about the beauty of football. It's like you have black, you have white, you have hillbilly, you have atheist, you have city, you have suburban, you have farm boy, and you know, coaches and team leaders. You gotta bring everybody to that one heartbeat level, you know. And so many organizations can learn, because you have to have honest conversations about those things, right? You know, to your point. Like,
no question.
We may not.
You know, I really wish in my heart that more people could witness the daily racial harmony in a football locker room.
I mean, you're talking about a guy like Bo Tyson, right? You're one of the youngest head coaches in the country at New Haven. You're probably 30, right? And Bo Tyson's probably 25, right? I mean, he's literally like, you've played with kids in that same, you know, cohort, right? And here's this kid teaching you, you know, grown man with an incredible faith himself. Like, man, this is powerful, man. I have a kid, you know, I have one of my players coming up to me and kind of just, you know, teaching his coach, you know, or kind of educating his coach on, you know, the importance of the platform of you know, welcoming faith. That's pretty
no
cool,
question.
Man.
You almost wish you could bring leaders of society, leaders of businesses, and you almost wish you could bring them and watch the daily interactions and the meetings and the locker room. And it's almost like if you wanted to teach somebody about racial harmony and everybody working for a cause, no matter what the background is, it's almost like you'd love to just bring these people into a football arena, or not the arena, the daily office, the locker room and the meeting rooms and everything.
Yeah.
Because it's not perfect, and nothing is. No system is. But man, at the end of the day, by week's end, everybody's on the same page, working for the same goal. And there's a lot of guys, you know, within these walls that really – you know, they probably leave here and don't realize some of the things that are going on in society, because their view is skewed because there really is no racial tension.
Absolutely.
And all those things. I shouldn't say there's none. There's very little,
sure,
or it's certainly a lot less than society.
I became a Saints fan when you got there. I really wasn't one prior to that, but I'm thinking of some of the strong personalities on that team, you know, in terms of the team leaders and you know, for you guys to go out and win 12 games in the NFL in the regular season, I mean, with, you know, you're not overcoming tensions or bad leadership to do that. Not in the NFL. You're not. I mean, it's just because, you know, you had some good players, but guess what? Obviously, so does everyone. You know, the top 15 teams in the NFL have, you know, comparable, you know, type of, you know, players. So, I mean, your ability to kind of, you know, work through, like any family, right? Like work through those differences and disagreements and, you know, different ideologies and promote a tolerance, right? Okay, I'm okay. You know, it's You know, and I think that's when I look at the society, it's like, I mean, I joked around, my dad was a Republican, my mom was a Democrat. And it was like, I mean, now, like, you know, you can't, you know, you almost can't, you know, we have such a low level of tolerance for people to think differently than we do. And that's on both sides, but we're not getting political here, but it's just, it stinks when you don't have the, you know, what an unbelievable opportunity for the athletes, the coaches to be part of us, you know, the inside of a locker room, right? I mean, some of us that have been know the importance.
It goes back to that judgmental thing before. It's okay to have different opinions. It's
sure.
okay to view things differently. It doesn't mean we have to hate. It doesn't mean we have to dislike. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to agree, but at the same time, you can still love someone that has different opinions.
Absolutely.
Than you. Go back to your mom and dad. Your mom and dad loved each other dearly, and they probably had completely differing opinions. And we're at a point where I just feel like in society, Joe, you know this, it's just there's way too much of it. Well, if it's not how I think, then you know you're wrong. You're wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's I think you go getting back to the football locker room. It's not about that. It's about working together for one common goal.
Amen. Riz, as we wind down here, I gotta ask you about Brady. Obviously, you know, I've come to appreciate him. Certainly, you probably can't stand him, but I didn't like him till like probably the last 18 months. And guys like Chuer, I'm like, you know, you watch The Last Dance. I loved it. I totally. Those guys, the ability to just continue to reinvent themselves and to stay at that level of like hyper focused, hyper preparedness, you know. And now, as a fat old guy, like at 53, I can, you know, like it blows me away their level of commitment. Like, what did you going into the season? Did you sense any of that he was going to have that type of year?
You know, I'll start off, Joe, by saying this. I have the utmost respect for the player and the person. You can't deny what he's done and his work ethic and his drive. You know, all those things. They can't be denied. I was, however you want to word it, fortunate or unfortunate to play him twice a year when I was with the Dolphins.
Sure.
And then what happens? I come here to the Saints and play him twice a year again now. So I can't get away from the guy. But I've seen him at some great moments. You know, fortunately, the teams I've been on, we've been able to beat him a few times as well. So
no
I've
doubt.
Seen him on both sides of the aisle. But listen, you can't deny what he has done as a player. You have to have respect. But I think that's a good comparison. You compare him to Michael Jordan because, you know, I really like that Last Dance. I actually made my family sit down and watch that all
Amen.
Together, and the kids sit down and watch that because, you know, here's a guy, talk about blinding out the distractions, Michael Jordan. And, you know, I think that's what made him so good. He knew exactly what he wanted to do and how he wanted to train. And Tom Brady's not much different. I mean, he's been able to kind of every time somebody wants to knock him down and say it's over, I think people have been saying that for the last 6 or 7 years. He just keeps proving everybody wrong. I knew there was some. This is when I had my kind of aha moment for this year. You know, we were fortunate we beat them twice.
Yeah, I know.
But going back before the season, when I saw him leading those player workouts at the high school in Tampa area during COVID with a helmet on and shoulder pads. And I mean, you know, I don't even remember if it was illegal or legal or whatever the heck it was back then during quarantine. All I know is this. I remember seeing the helicopter circle in the place and he's got, you know, all these receivers and running backs and he's teaching them the offense. I said to myself, this guy's, he's not just collecting a check. He has his mindset on going out and winning this whole darn thing. He was going to find a way around COVID. He was going to find a way around, you know, the ups and downs they had this year. And so certainly very, very lots of respect for the player.
And one last question before we head out here. How big is Drew Brees, Riz? How tall?
Drew is probably just about 6 foot. He might have to have shoes on to get to 6 foot, but he's just about 6 foot.
Man, what an amazing career he had, huh? Unbelievable, man.
Listen, you talk about, you know, as an outsider always looking in and then getting to know the guy and gosh, we could stay on here for another hour. I could just tell stories about, you know, why he was so successful and the work that he puts in. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. In the last 2 years, there's been a couple of mornings where he's made me feel bad because I come down the hallway and I can see the light flickering from an office, and he's already in there watching film at 6:30.
How about that? At 1:42, whatever he is, too, right?
Correct. That's amazing. Just heading in, and I would poke my head in and be like, hey, you beat me today, buddy.
That's
hilarious. Hey, coach, I'm going to get in here early, get my work done, and get out, and just, you know, just a real, it was literally like having another coach on the staff.
Oh, my God, no doubt.
That was able to go out, put the uniform on, and kind of just direct traffic to go along with the ability, the brain power, and everything
sure.
else. So just a phenomenal 2 years. I was fortunate to be able to say goodbye to him last week. He was over here at the office.
Oh, nice.
I see him in the hallway.
Awesome.
Yeah, and so just was able to give him a big hug, and he's now working for NBC Sports. He'll be a face, face in the media now. But
awesome.
Yeah, just a guy I was able to learn from for sure.
Brother. We're out of time. I love you, man. Thanks for coming in. Happy birthday, Tracy Murphy.
You,
Phyllis, I love you too. God bless everyone. We'll
Great
talk to you next week.
Yeah. I am a soul.